And there was a day when his sons, that is the sons of Job, and his daughters were eating and drinking wine in their eldest brother's house. And there came a messenger unto Job and said, "The oxen were plowing and the asses feeding beside them. And the Sabaeans fell upon them and took them away. Yea, they have slain the servants with the edge of the sword, and I only am escaped alone to tell thee." While he was yet speaking, there came also another and said, "The fire of God is fallen from heaven and hath burned up the sheep and the servants and consumed them, and I only am escaped alone to tell thee." While he was yet speaking, there came also another and said, "The Chaldeans made out three bands and fell upon the camels and have carried them away, yea, and slain the servants with the edge of the sword, and I only am escaped alone to tell thee." While he was yet speaking, there came also another and said, "Thy sons and thy daughters were eating and drinking wine in their eldest brother's house, and behold, there came a great wind from the wilderness and smote the four corners of the house, and it fell upon the young men, and they are dead, and I only am escaped alone to tell thee." Then Job arose and rent his mantle and shaved his head and fell down upon the ground and worshipped and said, "Naked came I out of my mother's womb. Naked shall I return thither. The Lord gave and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." In all this, Job sinned not, nor charged God foolishly. This morning, I'm speaking to you from a series called The Doctrines of the Hymns We Sing. And the song that I want to call your attention to today is the song, "Is It Well With Your Soul?" I'm going to pick up a copy of the book here because I may want to make reference to particular verses as time goes along, and you may want to look at it in case you do. It's number 146 in your hymnal, but of course I'll be preaching from the Bible, not from the songbook. I want you to notice as a text this morning, verse number 21. We see the trouble that Job has experienced. Not only has all of his earthly wealth been taken away from him, as far as all of his animals and things of that sort, but also his children have all been slain. And in verse number 21, he said, this is Job's statement, "Naked came I out of my mother's womb. Naked shall I return thither." And of course he means he'll go to the grave. "And the Lord gave, and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." And notice verse 22, "In all this Job sinned not, nor charged God foolishly." Now this is very difficult for us to understand on the surface. We look at that and we say, how could this man suffer such terrible, terrible trial and still be trusting God? The song that we're going to deal with today has a great deal of that sort of thing in it. Remember that 2 weeks ago today we spoke concerning the biblical doctrines that were in the song, "Just As I Am." And last Sunday, we spoke concerning the song, "Amazing Grace." In the first song, there was the experience of conversion. In the second song, there was the contemplation of salvation as a whole. In this song, we see the Christian's refuge and the Christian's faith in times of terrible tribulation. Now, the Bible indicates, and of course this songwriter indicates here in his lyrics, a time of great tribulation. But what you may not know is the tribulation that surrounded the man at the time that the song was written. This man, by the name of Spafford, had just lost his wife and two daughters at sea. At the time that this song was written, he had gotten a message that shipwreck at sea had taken the life of both his wife and two of his daughters. I think his only two daughters. And it is understood that it was at this time that he wrote this song that said, in spite of all of these things that transpire in the world, it is well with my soul. He was not indicating that he personally was satisfied with what was taking place in his life, but that in spite of what was taking place in his life, he knew that it was well in his soul. Now, I expect that no Christian could have such patience without having such tribulation. You know, we sometimes make the foolish mistake of thinking we understand the tribulation of someone when we are not going through what they're going through. I can often remember hearing people say, when someone had lost a wife or a husband or a child, "I understand." Well, you don't understand unless you've been there. I mean, I do not profess. It is utter foolishness for me to profess how someone would feel who has lost their lifetime mate, for I have not lost mine. My wife and I did suffer a miscarriage some years ago, and to us that was a great loss, but because we wanted children so badly, we only had the one. But I'll tell you something. I have been with people who have lost babies before, and there is no comparison between the two. One is a great loss. The other is a loss that goes beyond our ability to imagine. It's a terrible thing. The point is this, we simply do not know how to have this patience unless we've actually been in this tribulation. And this song, "It Is Well With My Soul," deals with a condition of this man's heart in spite of the tribulation that he's going through. Whatever else is taking place, he says, "I know that it is well with my soul." Do you remember the woman that had built the house for Elisha, and her son had died, and she went to the prophet, and he sent the messenger out to ask her, "Is it well with thee? Is it well with thy husband? Is it well with thy son?" And though the son had died just this morning, she answered, "It is well." I believe that she answered in faith, not by sight. This morning, I want to let the four verses of this song be the divisions of the message that I'm going to bring. And listen to the first verse with these things that I've said in your mind. Try to get this up here and have it out of the way at the same time being able to see it. I hope I can. But it says, "When peace like a river attendeth my way." Christians have experienced that. "When sorrows like sea billows roll." And he's contrasting those times of peace to this experience, apparently, of having lost his wife and his daughters. "Whatever my lot," in other words, whatever place God has appointed me at this time, "thou hast taught me to say." Doesn't say it's something he understands in himself, but he says, "God has taught me to say, it is well. It is well with my soul." Now, this is something that's very difficult for us to understand on the surfaces, on the surface. In the book of Psalms, chapter 3 and verse 24, David says, "Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me." And this word "comfort" here is like our word "chastise," and not in the sense of punishing or beating, but in the sense of correcting and directing. And David said, "Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil because of the presence of God." And that's what this man is describing here. Every life is a blend of tranquility and turmoil. There is not a person here who has not had good times in your life. Nor is there a person here who has not had some turmoil and trouble in your life. And whether you're saved or unsaved, you may be here this morning and may be an unsaved person. You've not yet been brought to the knowledge of the Lord Jesus Christ. And you're saying, "Well, this is for Christian people. The preacher is speaking just to saved people." No, every life, whether lost or saved, is a mixture or a blend of tranquility and turmoil. And if we walk a godly walk in this life, or if you are looking at the prospect of hell in eternity because you are unsaved, you still are not free. None of this promises freedom from this sorrow. I want you to consider what God had said about Job in chapter number 1 and verse 8. The Lord said unto Satan, "Hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect man, an upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil?" So here is a decent man, and a man that God himself says is walking uprightly, but all of this trouble and tribulation comes upon him. We live in a day of Cadillac Christianity. Do you know what I'm talking about? You have these charlatans that get on the television and say, if you want to be rich, just come to Christ. You got trouble, you know, in your life, if you're on dope, if you're if you're hooked on alcohol, if your husband's beating you, if your wife's cheating you, if you've got rotten teeth, just come to Christ and all of your troubles are going to be solved. That's garbage. That is garbage. The Bible does not teach that sort of thing. The Bible does not tell us that Christians will not have trouble. The Bible does not teach us that we'll never have trouble if we walk with the Lord. It simply does not teach us that. Through the centuries, some of God's most choice servants have suffered the most greatly. Think of the Apostle Paul, a man that God used. He said, "I labored more abundantly than they all, yet not I, but the grace of God that was with me." But listen, this man, from the time he was converted, he was persecuted and afflicted and cheated. Think of John Bunyan, who spent most of his adult life in prison. Do you know why? For preaching the gospel of Christ. In England, it was not permitted for a man who was not sanctioned at that time by the government, who did not have some kind of authorization from the government, and because it was a church state. And they had to have some kind of sanction or authorization, which Bunyan was not permitted to have. And he preached anyhow, and they put him in jail for it. And you know what he did in jail? He preached, and he wrote, and he prayed. This man had a daughter at home who was afflicted. His wife was alone with an afflicted daughter, needed him desperately. And they said to him over and over again, "If you'll just quit this insanity, and go home and take care of your family, we'll turn you loose." But he would not. When they turned him loose, he preached, but he suffered. There were martyrs by the hundreds of thousands who were burned at the stake. They were drowned. Can you imagine seeing your mother or your sister taken out into the tide water and tied to a stake and left there as the tide came in and drowned her? That happened thousands of times. People were taken and burned at stakes. They had poles ran through them. All sorts of things were done to afflict and to cause the people of God to suffer. Think of Adoniram Judson, the first missionary that ever went from the coast of the United States to a foreign field. This man suffered tremendously. The loss of his wife, the loss of his children, time he spent in prison. Night after night, this man spent in prison with his legs drawn up to a pole and only his head and shoulders laying upon the ground in the human excretion and vomit of men around him and mice and rats crawling over their faces and cockroaches and all other kinds of bugs crawling in their face, their hands tied behind them and their feet pulled up into the air. These were Christian men that suffered. Perhaps the greatest preacher that we've ever known and have the opportunity of reading extensively his messages, Charles Spurgeon, was a man that suffered with gout, and they said that the pain was just so excruciating that it was unbelievable. So God's children have not been exempt from trouble down through the years. I'm simply saying that our perceived well-being, this man says, "Is it well with my soul?" But this is not something he was experiencing. He was stating this by faith. And our perceived well-being is not always something that we feel or something that we see or something that we experience. Not at all. It is something that we can state by faith. God has said it is well. God has said all things work together for good to them that love the Lord, to them who are the called according to His purpose. And I can't see that. I do not experience that in my everyday life. I have to accept it because God said it. And there is a tremendous difference in the person that believes God in the situation and the person that doesn't. Let me call your attention to that by giving you the illustration of Job and his wife. Now, as far as I know, all Job's wife suffered in the midst of this was the loss of her children and some poverty. Job was physically suffering every day. Listen, I don't want to be... One of the ladies said the preacher got graphic and somebody was getting sick. This man had boils all over him, listen to me, with maggots in them. He was scraping them out with a potsherd. And he said, though the Lord slay me, yet will I trust Him. But at the same time, his wife was looking at him and saying, Job, you miserable, smelly wretch, why don't you curse God and die? That's what she said. This isn't living. Why don't you just curse God and die? And he said, you speak as one of the foolish women. Shall we receive good at the hand of God, and shall we not also receive evil? Through these many years, God has blessed, and now that we have trouble, now that we have trials, now that we're in tribulation, shall we not accept that from God? Shall we rebel against God because of that? You speak as one of the foolish women speak. And he said, though he slay me, yet will I trust him. Mr. Spafford did not boast of this assurance. Now you listen to what I'm saying. But he had a prayer that this would have control in his life. Listen to this second verse. Though Satan should buffet, and trial should come, let this blessed assurance control. Notice the request. Let this blessed... He didn't say, this is the experience of my soul. But he said, let this blessed assurance control, that Christ hath regarded my helpless estate, and has shed his own blood for my soul. Now listen, folks. This is a prayer that faith, not feelings, control us. All of us have feelings. And God intended for us to have feelings. It's not wrong for us to have feelings. But I want to tell you something. Sometimes when I let my feelings have control, I get angry. Don't you? Folks say, oh, I didn't think the preacher ever got mad. Oh, I don't. Just ask my wife. Sometimes when my feelings have control, I get discouraged. Sometimes when my feelings have control, I'm tempted to have a little pity party. Start feeling sorry for myself. But this man said, we don't want feelings controlling. Let this blessed assurance control, that Christ hath regarded my helpless estate. Does Jesus care? Oh, yes, He cares. His heart is touched with my grief. And this man said, God has revealed this to me. Let this assurance control me. Now listen, folks, we are all subjects of doubts and fears. I know sometimes we like to try to be Mr. Super Christian, make everybody think that we feel good about everything all the time, you know, that we just have God sitting on our shoulder every minute and nothing upsets us. Well, let's not be hypocrites. Let's not do that. Every one of us are subject to doubts and fears. Remember the disciples in the ship out in the ocean and the song, the song, Master, the Tempest is Raging, parrots their statement, carest thou not that we perish? Have you never felt in your heart, God, do you not care that my heart is broken? Do you not care that this is tearing my insides out? That's our nature to be like that. Job, after this tremendously good statement of faith, though he slay me, yet will I trust him. We find later on, we get over to about the 34th chapter of Job, if I remember rightly, that Elihu says of Job, you have justified yourself more than God. The very thing that Job promised, Job did not really fulfill. For he came to a point in his life under all of this trouble and he said, God has made himself my enemy. God has made himself a stranger to me. Though I pray, he doesn't listen. I try to do right and it doesn't matter to him. He doesn't care. That's what Job was actually saying. Listen, Mr. Spafford did not boast in this song that he had this assurance, but he said, oh Lord, let this assurance control. Let this take hold upon me. Let us remember that Jesus does see our helpless estate. Now listen to this carefully. He sees our helpless estate and he cares. He cares. You know, a little baby that has to be taken to the doctor and has to have shots, he twists and he squirms and his mother helps to hold him down. Don't you know that child must think, Mama, don't you love me anymore? If you love me, why are you participating in this affliction? Don't you care? But he doesn't understand the disease that's in his body, and he doesn't understand that the shot is not to afflict him, but to relieve him. And so it is with us. We know so little about what God is doing with what he's doing. We only experience what's taking place. We only understand what we are experiencing. And sometimes we are so smug and we are so wise in our own minds that we imagine that what we see and what we understand really is what's going on. But it isn't. We don't really know what's going on. We only know that tiny little part of it that we experience. Let's go back to that illustration with the Lord asleep in the ship. And the waves are bounding high. And these men who have been on, they've been fishing on this lake most of their lives. And here they are. And there's, they said, listen, this is it. You can't live in a storm like this. And they woke him up and said, Lord, carest thou not that we perish? And he stood and stilled the sea. But listen, folks. The fact of the matter is they were irritated because he was asleep. While they were in trouble, he was not making any noise. He was not saying anything. He was not doing anything. Now, I'm not going to get into the reasons why he might have been waiting. But the point is this, that there are many times when the Lord lets us go through tremendous amounts of tribulation before we ever see his hand move. And so he says in this second verse, let this blessed assurance control. Oh, listen, folks. Let's remember that Christ has regarded our helpless estate. Let's remember that he does care. Peter said, cast your care upon him, for he careth for you. He is concerned about you. And so we need to pray continually. We need to let our lives be a matter of continual prayer, that God would not allow us to deteriorate spiritually to the point that we think that what we're experiencing and what we understand is all that's going on. But that we remember that God is operating behind the scenes and he is operating for us and he's operating in us and he's doing things that we cannot understand. And so let this assurance of his love for us control us. Thirdly, there is the wonderful contemplation of sin's total forgiveness. I want you to look at verse 3. There is no doubt in my mind that this is one of the greatest verses of song that has ever been written anywhere by anyone. Listen to it. My sin, oh, the bliss of this glorious thought, my sin, not in part, but in whole, is nailed to the cross, and I bear it no more. Praise the Lord, oh my soul. Think about that for a moment. Does your sin bother you? Do you look at yourself, look back at your life and say, oh, my sin is such a terrible thing. It is a gulf that would cause me to be afraid to even believe that God existed. It's not a wonder to me that there are people out there today trying to prove that God does not exist. The wickedness is in the heart and soul of a man ought to cause him to wish that God did not exist. He does exist. He is there. And this man said, oh, the bliss of this wonderful thought, this glorious thought, that my sin, not in part but the whole, is nailed to the cross and I bear it no more. What does he mean? He is telling us that wonderful biblical doctrine, listen to me, of imputation. You know what impute means? It means to credit to one's account. And he said, my sin, not part of it, not before I was saved, not up until now, not up until now, not the parts of it that I have confessed, not the parts of it that I get rid of by daily confession, or some, my sin, not in part, but the whole, is nailed to the cross. Is nailed to the cross, and I bear it no more. What a tremendously great doctrinal statement. You know, some songs today say nothing. And some say some things that ought not be said. But this song says something. The songs that I'm going to be speaking to you about say something. Think of that wonderful doctrine of imputation. The greatest Christian comfort is the realization of full justification. My sins are gone. Because I quit sinning? Oh, no. I could never do that. How I wish I could, but I could never do that. My sins are not gone because I've quit sinning. My sins are not gone because I've done something to eradicate them or something to make up for them or suffered for them or said a rosary or done some kind of penance. God forbid that we should think of such foolishness as that. For those things could never get rid of sin. Hebrews 10 says the blood of bulls and goats could never get rid of sin. One thing can get rid of sin. The blood of Jesus Christ. They're nailed to the cross. That sin is nailed to the cross and I bear it no more. Listen to 1 Peter chapter number 2, verses 20 through 24. For what glory is it if when ye be buffeted for your faults, ye take it patiently? But if when ye do well and suffer for it, ye take it patiently, this is acceptable to God. For even hereunto were ye called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that ye should follow his steps, who did no sin, neither was guile found in his mouth, who when he was reviled, reviled not again. When he suffered, he threatened not, but committed himself to him that judgeth righteously. Listen now. Who his own self bare our sins in his own body on the tree. That's what this man was talking about. Bare our sins in his own body on the tree, that we, being dead to sins, should live unto righteousness, by whose stripes ye were healed. In the darkness of pain and distress that this man lived in, he said, this is an unparalleled balm, something that soothes and quiets my soul, to know that my sins are gone. Oh, listen, when you can look at that loved one that's suffering and indeed dying, and they can say to you, I know one thing, it is well with my soul. I'm ready, if God sees fit to take me. It is so different. It is so much more wonderful to see someone die like that than to see someone where every time that you look into their eyes, you see that fear that's deep-seated, and you seems that you dare not talk to them about death because they would go into some kind of a spasm of lack of reality or panic or something of that sort. So many times I have people that call me, not church members, not the people that understand the truth of God and death. But people say, would you visit this friend of mine? Would you visit my father? Would you visit my mother? Would you visit my brother or sister in the hospital? They don't have a church. They don't have a preacher. But listen now, the doctor said they're going to die of cancer, but we haven't told them, so please don't say anything about it. Listen to that. We're just going to let them die and go to hell, but while they're here, we don't want them being afraid of death. We don't want them thinking about death. But oh, listen, when we can go to a loved one and we can see in that loved one, or we can hear that loved one say, I'm glad that I know of Christ, that someone has told me about Christ, and I know this, that my sins, not in part but the whole, are nailed to the cross. I bear it no more. It's gone. It is well it is well with my soul. When we feel violated by others and we feel that God is perhaps over-testing us, listen to me. You ever feel that way? You feel you're mistreated by other men? You feel that maybe God might have sort of turned on the test switch for you and forgot to turn it off? You ever feel that way? Yeah, I mean, sure, God knows I need testing, but maybe He forgot He was testing me. Wonder if He put me in the oven and forgot where I was. I know you say, oh, I wouldn't think. Yeah, we do think like that sometimes. I mean, in the back of our minds, we get to wondering, I wonder if God really notices what's going on. But in a time like this, you can say, well, whatever else happens, one thing I know, my sins are gone. I don't have to answer for these because they're nailed to the cross. You might ask Simon Peter as he suffers in his ministry, for he was persecuted and mistreated and continually maligned. Peter, have you ever been mistreated? Have you ever been denied by your followers? Have you ever had someone to forsake you? And Peter would say, oh yes, but I deserve it. Did you not read what I did on the night before the Lord was crucified? Yes, I deserve that. Listen, I think all of us, just think for a moment and I'll move to the last point. I think every one of us here this morning would have to admit, I have been buffeted less than I deserve. Think of your sins. Ask yourself, have I not been buffeted by Satan less than I deserve? Has God not been merciful to me? Now then, I come to the last point, and that is the fact that trouble and age cause us to accept heaven. I want you to listen, if you would, now to the fourth verse. And Lord hastes the day. How many of you, honestly, come on, I'm not talking about a lot of religious gas. I'm not talking about spouting off something so that you sound particularly spiritual. And Lord, haste the day when the faith shall be sight, the clouds be rolled back as a scroll, the trump shall resound, and the Lord shall descend. Even so, it is well with my soul. All of you have heard the story of the little boy and the question, how many of you want to go to heaven? Now listen, folks, God created us, and we all have this desire. No matter how pious we are, there is a sense in which we want to cling to life. Listen to what I'm saying. We want to cling to life, and we want to cling to this world. Ah, you say, preacher, I don't care if I die tomorrow. I just don't care. Well, unless you're in terrible misery, I don't believe that. I don't believe that. God has created within us that desire. You heard the story of the little boy, and I know all of you have heard this, most of you at least. We're sitting in the back of the church, and the preacher said, how many of you want to go to heaven? And everybody raised their hand except this one little boy, and he didn't put his hand up. And the preacher said, son, don't you want to go to heaven when you die? And he said, oh, yes, when I die. I thought you was getting up a load for now. Well, a lot of us are like that, you know. We want to go to heaven when we die, but we don't want to die, you know, any sooner. And God, I think, put that desire to live within us. It's there. Nothing wrong with that. And we say, how then can a person really be ready to die mentally? How can a person be willing to die? Well, I'll tell you something. The loss of health, the loss of earthly goods, the loss of loved ones, and all of these things can cause us to begin to anticipate heaven. I have visited at the bedside of many people who were ready to die. I don't just mean they were ready in the sense that they were going to go to heaven when they died. They'd been that way for a long time. But they had not for a long time been really ready to die in saying, it'll be nice to have it over with. But now the husband or the wife has been gone for 25 or 30 years. Most of the children are dead. The health is gone. This poor old saint has not sat up or stood up for years and years and years. They don't know what it means to eat a meal and know how it tastes. Whatever money they may have, they can't spend it. It doesn't do anything for them. Most every minute of their life is filled with pain. And I think they can say, Lord, haste the day. God tends as we grow older. You know, I'm 61. That's not very old. I hope I can preach till I'm 91 and then die suddenly. But maybe 81. You know, if arthritis got real bad, 81 probably be at least enough. You know what I mean? If it got too bad, 71. I've seen some people where 71 would be plenty. But the point is this, that as we grow older and as our health begins to fade and as the troubles of life heap upon us, God uses that to prepare us for heaven. He really does. And I can understand death. I can feel more friendly toward death at 61 than I could at 21 or 31 or 41 or 51. I feel more friendly toward death because God takes away more of the things of this earth and He invests more in heaven. You know, I've got a lot of dear preacher friends that I used to love to visit with that I haven't seen for a long time. And I'll get to see them and visit with them in heaven. My parents are gone. I only have one uncle. Actually, I believe now that with the exception of this one uncle, that I am the third in line, age-wise, in all of the Keener clan, you know, in this grouping. I'm the third in line, I believe, now, as far as age. Now, I plan to outlive them, but I mean, as far as age is concerned, I'm the third in line. I can remember a time when I didn't hardly know anybody that was in heaven, but now I know a lot of people that have gone to heaven. And so there is an investment there. And the point is this, that we walk by faith today. The world thinks we're fools. I know there'd be people who would come in and sit down here and say, Preacher, you're crazy. I mean, you're talking about not feeling so bad about death. You're crazy. So, now, I understand why they would feel that way, but the fact of the matter is they'll not always feel that way. There'll be a time when they will understand what I'm talking about here. The values we put on earthly things and upon our earthly lives slowly changes. Life to a man who is 81 years old or 91 years old or 101 years old. Of course, they say not too many die after they get to be 100. But anyhow, of course, that's supposed to be funny. But anyhow, it's not the same as it is to a young man. There's not all the same enjoyment. God shifts those things and changes the round. It'll be great when we meet our loved ones and all of their faults will be removed and all of your faults will be removed. Wouldn't life be a wonderful thing if you could never hurt your wife's feelings, brethren? Wouldn't it be nice if your character was like you wanted it to be and you never hurt your wife's feelings, you never disappointed her? Wouldn't it be nice, ladies, if your life was such that you never disappointed your husband or hurt his feelings? Listen, folks, a time will come when we won't. I know we'll not be married and given in marriage in heaven, but I believe our loved ones here will still be loved ones in heaven. There's no doubt in my mind about that. And we'll have them without the disappointments of this life. And there'll be no more sorrow. There'll be no more sickness. There'll be no more dying. There'll be no more parting. No more heartache. No one will shed tears. No one will need comforting. Nobody will be calling the preacher and saying, Preacher, would you go over and visit so-and-so? Somebody just died in their family and they need and go over and visit. Nobody will be doing that. They won't need us. You say, that doesn't sound wonderful to me. I mean, that's great that they won't need any of the comforting. All the clouds, he said, the clouds be rolled back like a scroll. All of the clouds of adversity will be gone. That day is coming. Now listen, in closing, I want to ask you a question. Are you ready? See, people die at all ages. We can say that it won't be so bad to die when you get to be 80 or 90 or 100 years old because your body's worn out and you're sick and your friends have all gone and you have more to look forward to in heaven than you do here, but the thing about it is, folks, that people don't all wait till they're 60 or 70 or 80 years old to die. They die at all ages. You may be 20. You may be 16. You may be 13. And you may not have a week of life left. I don't know, and you don't know. Are you ready to meet Him? If today He should call you away, is it well with your soul? There's another song that says, "Is it well?" It asks the question, "Oh, if today He should call you away, is it well? Is it well with your soul?" Would you be ready to meet Him, or would you go the route of the rich man who also died and was buried, and in hell he lift up his eyes? And he said, "I'm tormented in this flame." Think about it. What is your condition before God? Let's stand with our heads bowed and hearts lifted to God in prayer.